Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to an expert talk from November 2018. Miss Ulrike Alt, textile specialist, presents In the Future Without Trace, Membranes, Fabrics and Accessories.
Thank you to my guests, thank you to the audience for being here so late on the second day of the fair. Today I'm very proud that I have so important companies sitting here talking to me and discussing with us about new sustainable ways to protect the environment, to protect the water, to reduce waste and whatever you can imagine. And this is why we have these experts here. There are two companies bringing brand new innovations, presenting yesterday, and two companies were doing lots of efforts in sustainability, all are doing it. So thank you for being here, and maybe it would be great that you would introduce yourself and your innovation you brought to the fair just for two or three sentences to our audience. So who will start? Sylvia.
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Sylvia Happel. I'm Business Development Manager at Lansing AG. We make wood-based cellulosic fibers. And today I will speak about our most innovative and most sustainable development, Refibra technology. So it's a lyocell fiber with recycled cotton content.
Oh, wow. So could you just explain why the lyocell itself is very sustainable? So why did you compose it with the recycled cotton?
Yeah, the lyocell technology is a solvent process. So you need just water, a non-toxic solvent, and wood pulp. And the solvent is recycled to almost 100%. That means you have almost no wastewater. So only 0.5% of the solvent go to the wastewater treatment. And you have no sulfur emissions like for the viscose production. So compared to the viscose production, the lyocell process is much more eco-friendly, much more eco-conscious.
And is it still as functional as your other wood-based fibers?
Yeah, lyocell is also the most functional fiber. It's a very strong fiber. It has a very high tenacity and also very good moisture management. So it absorbs moisture much more than cotton, about 50% more moisture absorbance than cotton. And it absorbs also moisture very fast. So for this reason, it has a very good cooling effect, very good thermoregulation and moisture management. And it's also very nice on the skin. It has a smooth surface and feels very smooth and nice on the skin.
Oh, that's great. So we really can say it's a functional and sustainable fiber. So Mario, you are working on a very new innovation. Just tell the audience.
So I'm Mario. I lead the company Tempora, and we produce membranes based on a solvent-free, solid templated template, which is not there on the market yet. All the processes we've seen so far are either non-porous or solvent-based to some extent. And with this, we are working on biodegradable options. I've heard before that the membranes in biodegradability are still not there. We found a lot of fabrics that we can combine with our material, but so we're going to have a complete laminate biodegradable ready soon.
And so your membranes are already ready for the market?
Our membranes are ready for the market. The scale of the production is not really there yet. So if you want to do a full collection, we might struggle to produce all of it, but this is scaling, and scaling can be done internationally quite directly. So, yes.
Oh, wow, that sounds great. So what other terms of sustainability did you look at while you developed this new membrane?
We try to start off with materials that are nature-based only. So there is no material in there that is not found in just going outside. And we use them in a special forms, in sizes and amounts that are not very common, and combined they give this new result. But they come from nature, can be given back without any trace being left to the next generations and kids to come.
Okay, and you're working together with mills that provide the sustainable fabrics as well, or are you doing it as a whole laminate?
we have to work together with the mills to produce the whole laminate, because we do the membrane, we do the area of the membrane, we create the porous surface, we create the functionality, but we don't do the whole laminate by ourselves. We have to combine it with other experts, as we found them here, to succeed.
Wow, and could you tell a little bit about the functionality in terms of breathability and water repellence?
Yeah, I mean, there we enter a world which is so not well defined. Me as an engineer, I suffer all the time because the standards, you all know it, are very diverse, and the numbers you see on here, you see any fabric and it says 20,000 millimeters water column. So, all right, you have 50 different fabrics and all of them have exactly the same number. How probable is that? So they probably all are not very correct in their measurements, and with the breathability the same. So the specialty we can claim for our process is that the size and the amount of pores we can introduce are tunable. We can tune the layer thickness, we can tune the hole size, we can tune the amount of holes, the pores, and they still remain waterproof, as we can functionally hydrophobize, so have them water repelling from the inside of their porous surface, and with this it stays waterproof, but it can be very breathable, can also be not so breathable, and even more waterproof in the end. So the functionality is tunable, and this makes it very interesting as a material.
That sounds good. So Gary, yesterday you brought a very new innovation and launched it at Performance Days. Please tell us about it.
Sure. First, my name is Gary Smith. I'm the CEO of PolarTech. We launched a product here for the first time called Power Air. And Power Air is the first insulating fabric that's specifically designed and engineered to shed less microfiber. As the name implies, what the strategy was instead of lofting through napping and shearing to encapsulate air, we decided to try to find a way to knit the air into the fabric. And so if you haven't seen it, it's effectively knit bubble wrap. We're creating individual pockets of air. Air is the thing that insulates, keeps warm air next to you, and keeps cold air out. And then by doing that in a way where we're constructing the front and the back of the fabric in a tighter construction, has a much lower propensity to shed microfiber over its life cycle. Along the way, we had to develop a test protocol to compare one fabric to another, and we've worked with some third parties to validate that testing protocol and contributed to a process to get that established as an industry standard.
And I heard that you developed an own test to measure how many microfibers are washed out or not. Is it right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's what I was just referring to. I mean, there's a number of industry efforts that are going on, some of which have been talked about here over the last day or two. And again, we're all sort of triangulating in on the same thing. It's like, how do you compare one fabric to another fabric to ascertain its propensity to shed fiber over the normal life of that fabric? So the industry's been pretty good over the years at developing superwash techniques to kind of simulate, you know, the life cycle of a fabric as exposed to, you know, multiple home launderings over the course of its life. But no protocol has really been established to capture and measure the volume of fiber that given fabric would shed over that superwash cycle. And that's really where we've landed. So
that's great. Wow. And Mike, you brought two new innovations to the fair.
Yes. My name's Mike Joyce. I'm president of Primaloft. We're in a premium ingredient brand focused mostly on insulations and technical fabrics. And so what we're bringing to the show is what we call Primaloft Bio. And it is a recycled polyester that's also biodegradable. And we make it both available as an insulation. And we also have recently been able to make it into a filament yarn, which allows us to then make technical fabrics with it. And the way it works is we are using polyester, recycled polyester, and we're modifying the polyester to make it more attractive to naturally occurring microorganisms that exist both in seawater and in landfill.
Not on human skin.
And that allows, so we make the fiber more attractive so the microbes attack the fiber. And over time deteriorates it into natural materials.
So the biodegradation time is about 400 days, I heard?
The test method that we use, for those technical people in the audience, it's ASTM55D5511. It's an accelerated anaerobic landfill test environment. And so what that does is mimics landfill, but it accelerates the process.
Okay.
So over 400, and I believe it's almost a little over 400 days is what our test method is.
That sounds interesting. So Sylvia, this is your profession as well, the biodegradability. So is there any difference between the natural fibers and this modified polyester in biodegradation?
Yes, I think so. So all our fibers are pure cellulose, and they are not only biodegradable, they are compostable. So the biodegradable means just the degradation, mechanical and chemical degradation, and compostability includes also that there are no toxics left and that there is no negative influence on organisms in the soil or in the seawater. And all our fibers are compostable, even home compostable, and they are also biodegradable in seawater. So they are gone after 3 months in average. So they are, but we made the test only on the pure fiber.
Okay.
So of course, when you have dyeing and finishing on it, it could look differently.
Yeah, this is the next question. But Mike, I think your product will biodegrade totally in natural parts.
Yes. Yeah. So. So the biodegradable process that we use is really a hydrolysis process where it breaks down the material and then the microorganisms are allowed to enter.
Mm-hmm.
So we off-gas CO2, water CO2, and methane. So what is remaining is natural carbon material like a humus, an organic material.
Okay, that sounds great. So there's one very philosophic question. What is better, the recycling of the fabrics or the biodegradation or the cradle to cradle? What would be the gold standard? What do you think? So I don't know who wants to answer, maybe all of you.
Well, I can start by saying we're a believer in recycling, reuse, repair, but what hasn't been solved is end of life.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly happens. So we elected to go down the path of both making it recyclable and then biodegradable. So we want to solve both those problems.
Okay. So Gary, as well, most of your fabrics are made of recycled content?
Yeah, I mean, 60% of everything that we produce is now recycled PET. We've been at that since 1993. It's not a new process. We've consumed over 1.2 billion water bottles since 1993. That sounds like
that's
big number.
Lot.
It sounds like a big number, and it is in this industry, but it's a really tiny number relative to the number of bottles that are consumed per year. So it took us 23 years to get to a billion bottles. In the United States alone, we consume 40 to 50 billion per year. Recycling is important. So make sure if you drink out of a plastic water bottle that it finds its way into a recycling bin. It all matters. I mean, if you listen to what's up here, you've got folks who are working on trying to make things out of a better, more natural input or make things without using solvents that have potential downsides, et cetera. You've got folks who are trying to make a product that's durable and doesn't shed during its lifetime. You've got folks that are making things that will break down after their end of life. So I think it's all important. You know, use good materials to start with, be responsible in how you produce them, make sure you can, you know, if you can reuse something, use a recycled input, and then when you're done with it, make sure it, you know, finds its way into either back to its inert components or, you know, some other end use. Thing that we haven't talked about is there's some pretty exciting developments that we've been following with being able to take a fabric, you know, a garment that's got mixed media in it, say nylon, spandex, polyester, and be able to recycle that by separating it into those base components and then reusing them again. I find that pretty intriguing, and I hope that there's continued progress and more science.
Do you know companies that are working on this different theme?
Yeah, we've got a couple of NDAs that we've signed with, you know, a few folks that are working on it.
Great.
Look forward to more progress there.
So, Sylvia, what do you think? What is the greatest point still to solve for the textile industry concerning sustainability, of course?
Regarding recyclability, so this is really a big issue for us. So, we want to increase closed-loop products. So at the moment, the recycled cotton content is 20%, so we will increase this next year up to 30%. And we are making trials on on post-consumer waste, but this is really a big challenge because you have blends with elastane, with synthetic fibers, you have different dye stuffs, finishes, even dirt or washing powder, optical whiteners, and this is really a big challenge because we need pure cellulose to make our fibers. And I think we will be able to solve this problem, but I think this is really a big challenge for the biggest challenge for the future, the blends, and also the accessories, so the sewing threads, the buttons, the zippers, and so on, which has to be cut off. And I think really the design has to change to make products recyclable or more sustainable.
So you think it's a great part to solve, to use the right accessories at the right place. So Mario, when you start in the textile business, what is the demand coming from the garment brands to your company? What are they looking for?
Yeah, the big issue was that everybody just asked for the final product. Nobody is really happy to work on a process or to develop something together with a specific target. They just ask, what's your final thing? What's your thing that you can sell us right now in like this and that many meters? Which is not what gives us the option to develop a perfect solution for a problem. And to come back to the gold standard, I would say, throughout society with anything we use in our life is knowledge. So we should actually be aware of what material is used for what, because if you drive a car, you're not going to have a biodegradable car, but you might want to use a biodegradable jacket if you know that you're not going to wear it for more than 2 years. So just be aware of where your material comes from, where it goes, and what's been done with it in its lifetime. And with this, you can solve, I think, most of the problems. But yeah, it's a very multi-level issue to address, I think.
Mike, Gary, what do you think? Is there enough knowledge within the sportswear and fashion brands, or do they have to learn more about sustainability? And
I think it all depends. There are brands out there. I always ask the question, what is your purpose? What problem are you trying to solve? And I think that's the key question. And then you use innovation try to solve those problems. So what is your purpose? What are the engineering factors that you're looking for? What kind of permeability and strength and dyeability, and what kind of what kind of sustainability standards are you looking for? And then what we do is we look at technologies, materials, textile processes, and try to find solutions. There are too many that are just looking for something off the shelf just to meet a requirement. So I think the most important question is what is the problem you're trying to solve and what's your purpose?
Yeah, and the brands know it already, what the purpose is? Or
some do. Some have very, very sophisticated consumer intelligence. Some have very, very good scientists, and others don't. And so the others that don't tend to look at our other colleagues in our industry as an example, and then they try to follow quickly.
And if you see it from the consumer side, does the consumer already know lots about these terms, or is he only asking, oh, I want to have something that is sustainable, and if there's any sticker on it, he will buy it? So is he conscious already? What do you think?
I might be a bit provocative on this one. I don't personally believe there's a tremendous amount of consumer demand pull at this point. I think there's a lot of push from the industry to market green as a good thing.
Okay.
Or a differentiator, for example. And, there's some brands, we're all familiar with who they are, that have built their brand by differentiating it as an environmentally responsible brand. But if you just look at the hard facts, right, and I'll just share one with you. I'm an American, right? United States today, roughly 320 million people. The average American purchases 100 pieces of apparel per year, half of which either get worn once or never at all. Okay? Everybody loves the BOGO, buy one, get one free. Everybody loves the 40, 50% off sale. People just aren't thinking and behaving in a way that's responsible from a consumption standpoint. Okay? It doesn't mean that there aren't, right? I think we're a different community here and perhaps an isolated part of the society at large. And so I hope, that there's greater awareness and demand over time. But I'd you know, honestly not seeing a lot of pull demand at this point from consumers directly, particularly if it costs more.
I generally agree, but I am seeing a massive shift that's happening. If I would walk down the Garment District of New York City 3 years ago, and I would talk to the brand, fashion brand, about blue sign, they would ask me how to spell it. And if I talked to them about recycled content, they would tell me that that their consumers are not interested in it. If I walk down that street tomorrow, they're going to ask me, is it sustainable? Is it GRS certified? Are you blue sign certified? It's changing quickly. And I think this industry should applaud itself, mm-hmm. because this is the industry that led. It's the outdoor, it's really performance textiles that have led that charge, and it took too long. But I do believe it is happening.
That sounds great. So could it be the solution that there are governmental ways to regulate what types of garments will be produced? Sylvia, what do you think?
To be honest, regulations by the government will take too long. I had my experience with the textile business, mm-hmm. and I believe mm-hmm. it's just too slow. But I think what really works is the pressure from NGOs. So we are in contact with Canopy, but also with changing markets. And the pressure from the NGOs can really change something. So when they put pressure on the brands, they really move, and also including us. Mm-hmm. So we were also mentioned in the changing market report, so our viscose production in Indonesia, and we moved. So we decided, or our management decided, to invest 100 million euros in wastewater treatment in Indonesia, reach the same environmental standards as our sites in Austria and in China, so the European mm-hmm. eco-label standards. Mm-hmm. So I think this is faster and more helpful. And about consumer demand, so I work mainly with German and Scandinavian brands, and in these countries, the consumer demand for sustainable apparel is really growing. There are so many great fashion brands who are sustainable, so eco-fashion brands, and I think there is the awareness of consumers is growing, also by the communication from NGOs mm-hmm. through mm-hmm. social media and so mm-hmm. on.
I absolutely agree that if we wait for government, we'll be very old. They are slow to react. But I believe the Outdoor Industry Association in the U.S., the EOG, the COG, I think our organizations can really help. By my biggest concern is we have lack of definition. What is the definition of sustainability?
Yep.
If you look at the EU Commission guidelines, it'll tell you that is not defined. What is the definition of biodegradability? What tests do you use? What certifications? So there's an opportunity for those organizations who are advocates of the membership, could go a long way to determine what are the standards in which we will abide by. And when you do that, I think you have a greater opportunity to communicate in a clear, concise way to the consumers and provide global certifications that will help guide that. And then when the government decides mm-hmm. to get in, mm-hmm. there's already standards set, and so that process moves much mm-hmm. quicker.
So Mario, what do you think, what could be the best way of global communication to the consumer or to the brands that they know what else is necessary and can be done?
So I completely agree that the industry pushes itself, and it's actually very nice to have an industry that pushes itself, which is not a natural thing to have if it's any other industry are much more money driven, and here it's a lot of marketing, which is also money driven, of course, in the end. But in the end, if you communicate through marketing and you do this by differentiating in a way on sustainability or biodegradability, the money you put in there and the regulation that come out of these energy intense marketing campaigns are what then in the end lead to the knowledge I mentioned before, because the customer has to learn what is there. And if we hide behind names instead of definite numbers, if you have things that are listed, and the consumer can actually compare and list in the brain and say, this one is that, lives that long, has been used twice, and is that functional. It's much easier for a customer to choose where to spend his or her money and how long to use a material, and not to buy the 2-for-1 or the 50% off, but the one that has actually been used twice, and is that's the reason why it's cheaper. And this would actually be much more getting us to a target we want to go there.
So in total, there are lots of efforts, there are lots of new innovations, but there's still a lot of work to do to convince all parts of the textile chain, I think, at least to the consumer. So thank you very much for your explanations. Actually, we still have 15 minutes left. So is there anybody in the auditorium who has a question to our experts concerning their products or concerning any sustainable issues?
Hello, my name is Sarah. I have one question actually to the membrane you were talking about. I don't know, maybe I missed the part at the beginning, but what is this membrane actually consisting of? Or is this like the secret?
So it is to some extent a secret, as there are multiple options. The one that actually works and is biodegradable and compostable is a PLA-based one, which has many options and errors down the road, as we know already. But we can use a polymer in the beginning and make it porous with our process, and then go on in the end, for example, with the materials you proposed or other ones. So it's not fixed yet what the first product is going to be. But at the moment, the PLA one is there.
Thank you. That sounds so interesting. Any more questions?
You're obviously very all concerned with kind of new innovations, and when something's very new, it inevitably comes out more expensive than the technology that was there prior to it. What is the main driver that can bring down the cost of new sustainable innovations to make them more accessible to the wider market?
It's not always the case, actually, that an innovation is more expensive than what it's designed to replace. I mean, you know, the practical reality is if you use recycled water bottle chip to make new polyester yarn, it costs less than it does to do that with virgin. It's not sold for less, but it actually costs less. Okay, so it's an innovation that made somebody more money in the value chain. You know, in the case of what I was describing with Power Air, we're not napping and finishing the fabric to create loft. So that's processing time that we're saving. I think, you know, it just in general, you know, in the spirit of kind of be the change that you want to be, right, or you want to see, it, being sustainable is good business. You know, don't waste things, right? Reuse, reduce, recycle, you know, I mean, it's just, it is economic, ultimately. It's just who that benefit accrues to. And if there's an incentive to be uneconomic, you know, to make the cheapest thing in the largest quantity as quickly as you can because it's disposable, that's a different, that's what I was trying to articulate in terms of getting consumer demand, right? To not think of apparel as disposable. Think of apparel as something that you're going to buy, it's going to perform for you, it's going to have a life cycle that endures over a reasonable time frame.
Mike, the Primaloft innovations, cheaper, more expensive?
It'll be a bit more expensive because it's so new. It goes down the whole the volume price model. So the more volume that you can create, the more leverage you have to get better pricing and preferred pricing. Gary's correct on the recycled side. Doesn't mean that he's paying less for it, but it is actually cheaper to make. And I'll give you an example. When Primaloft got into the recycled products, 90% of our product mix now has 50% or greater PCR in it. We did that at a higher cost basis with the bet that we would be able to drive volume. So we took on more cost, but we didn't raise prices. And as a result of that, we were able to get more adoptions to go back and you know lower the price again. So some of this is the volume price curve that we have to play. Mm-hmm. So the more we can get moving on it and the more volume, and even if our entire industry is moving, we don't move the needle that much. It's all the other apparel around us, fashion, fast fashion, they're much, much larger than we are. And so if we can get that kind of volume, then those prices should drop.
And Sylvia at Lansing, how is it working there?
Also the Refibra technology is more expensive. So there are two reasons. It's a new technology which we developed to make pulp from cotton scraps. So the cotton scraps are for free, but to make the pulp is rather expensive. And it's also the quantity. So it's a new technology. The demand is growing, but at the moment the quantities are still small, and that's the main reason. And also, for example, for the viscose production, if you want to have a clean viscose production, you have to invest in technology, and that's expensive. That's not for free. It's cheaper to put the wastewater just in the next river and not to filter the emissions. That's a fact.
That's right, but it's a good goal. And Mario, did you already calculate the cost of your membrane?
We calculated them, and they don't seem too expensive. Otherwise, we would have stopped. I mean, you're not dumb. But the point is that all my calculations have margins of other people already in there, which makes it more expensive than they actually would be if I produced them on the proper scale. So they're going to be even cheaper, which is even better for us.
Interesting fact. So any more questions from the audience?
Another question. So we're constantly talking about reusing products or repairing them. And from a consumer perspective, I can totally understand it. Like, you can use your product longer, it's more sustainable, you can save money on not buying another one. And of course, you're saying this is also in your interest because you want to do something good for the environment. But in the end, it means there's less consumers buying your products. Is this something that you're like fine with, or are you hoping for a Patagonia effect where they are saying, don't buy this jacket, and even more people bought the jacket in the end?
Population continues to grow, so we're not going to stop doing that. I think Gary captured it well, and I'll say it a bit differently. Green is good. Green is about recycling and repairing and reusing, and it's around reducing waste. But it's not so much it is waste as it relates to the final product, but it's waste throughout the entire process. Right? It's about driving waste out, like lean manufacturing and those concepts. You try to take waste out in every step of the way. And if you think about sustainable practices, that's about keeping more of the waste, keep most of that product back into your product, right? So when Gary's talking about shedding, there's an economic impact as well, because that fiber stays in the product and you're not processing it out in your factory. So instead of bringing a pound of fiber in or a kilo and getting half a kilo out, now you're actually getting almost all of the kilos out. So that's real money. In terms of the continued growth, it's around driving share of market. It's about capturing more consumers, and it's about the population growth.
Yeah, if I could add to that, you make a choice. Just like a consumer, you make a choice to buy a premium product or a not so premium product. When you're in this industry, you make a choice to either position yourself as a premium producer of things that have real value. They solve problems, they endure over time. Some of those problems are basic needs like warm, cool, dry, safe, and sometimes they're, I feel good about what it is that I'm buying because I know who I bought it from is responsible about how they made it and how they delivered it. So you make that choice. We're not a low-cost fabric producer. That's not where we operate. And I think in that positioning, there's plenty of demand. I'm not worried about I would encourage everybody here to not buy cheap clothing, right? Just because it's the wrong thing to do, on so many levels. You don't need it. It's not going to, there's nobody in a third world country wanting your discarded clothing, okay? So don't feel good about putting it in the bin where it's going to go someplace else. Most of that stuff ends up in rags anyways. So buy good things, feel good about it when you buy them, but don't buy bad things. And we make a choice, I think, to position ourselves as people who make good things.
Thank you so much. So is there any more questions from the audience? Oh, okay, over there.
I really like to understand why we don't recycle from wasted textile. We always recycle from PET bottles. And what's the big problem to separate different, like polyester and nylon, to make it happen?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things. We do actually have product that uses sort of mixed input, okay? There's real limitations, though, particularly when it comes to color. So that product, for example, can only be made in black because it's taking back, you know, table cuttings from fabric, you know, in apparel manufacturing, and it's putting it all into the pot. And at the end of the day, you know, that has to be black because you can't, the science isn't there yet to extract all the color from it and get it back to something that's pure. Even the bottles, when you recycle PET, you have to sort the bottles. This one has a little bit of a blue tint to it, so it can't be sorted in with the clear ones and the green ones and so on. So if you buy water, buy clear bottles. Just saying. I'm not a chemist, and maybe somebody here is a chemist, but there's, you know, it gets down to, you know, chemical science about the different polymers that are in mixed media. They break down in different ways, and you know, it's just hard to do that. But like I said, we're actively supporting some efforts with third-party companies that are developing some pretty interesting science on how to get those things back to their element components, and then be able to sort them through centrifuge and other techniques, and then be able to start back with the pure inputs. So, keep my fingers crossed.
You know, Gary's certainly correct around the dyeing process. Each materials are slightly different, so you get different shades. But you have to separate materials because nylons and polyesters are very different, and you can't just put them in one batch and try to recycle. And so there's a cost element on how to separate the nylon from the polyesters. You could have nylon on the face, and you could have polyester on the inside, and then you have elastomers that are around, and so it's quite complicated, and it's quite expensive to literally physically separate out all those components and then put them in their proper sorted bins and then recycle those independently. So it's an economic reality to that. Gary's comment around chemically reprocessing it and separating, that is certainly a viable option that we should be looking at.
It's really energy intensive. That's one of the issues, and it requires solvents to break down things back to their, you know, component elements. So obviously solvents in general are sketchy things, and so if you can create closed loop systems where, you know, you can sort of magically drop a garment in and have raw feedstocks of the elements that were in it come out the other end, that would be awesome. So that's, I do believe though, over time, right, as you know, we're all, as producers, we're all faced with cost inputs that are going up, right? All this stuff ultimately, you know, the synthetic world starts out with, it's recycled dinosaurs. It's all petrochemicals, you know, at their base. We're gonna run out of recycled dinosaurs, right, as we keep pumping oil out of the ground. So I think there'll be more and more economic incentive to take some of this stuff, this trash, and break it back down into its constituent components and reuse it, because it's gonna become valuable, right?
And Sylvia, your cotton, your recycled cotton is coming from what kind of sources? Is it post-consumer?
No, it's pre-consumer waste. It's cutting waste from mm-hmm. the textile industry. Okay. So this would be thrown away usually. But we are working also on post-consumer waste. But also there, the blends are the challenge. Mm-hmm. So we have to separate the cellulose from the synthetic fibers. Mm-hmm. We are working on this. So we have also some cooperations with universities and startups to solve this problem. So we are sure that we will, mm-hmm. can solve the problem. Just a matter of time. Mm-hmm. It's really, technology.
Yeah. And Mario, did you try to create your membrane out of waste? Or why did you choose the PLA?
Yeah, our arms are not long enough to really go down to the level of creating new materials yet, or probably not going to ever be. If we look at what the petrochemistry does on this planet in its size and the machinery they have, if all of these dinosaurs would be made out of recycled cotton or recycled fabrics, this might be a job for the chemical industry. And for us, this was not an option to do yet. I mean, we're two people at the moment. How could we do everything?
Yeah, but it sounds great what you invented. So as we only have 2 minutes left, is there any last question in the auditorium? You're all happy. I learned a lot. I hope you did it also. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your questions. Thank you to my guests for explaining your new technologies, your inventions. So feel free. There's still 2 hours left during the fair feel free to see the innovations of PolarTech, PrimaLoft, and Lansing at the booth. And Mario, I think, still will be here for a few minutes to explain his new invention. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other expert talks, go to www.performancedays.com. Copyright November 2018 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.